You are listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, Chicago's home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
Welcome to episode 15 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. We are so glad that you've taken the time to listen to us, and we hope to keep you engaged for the next, you know, hour-ish. So I'm your host, Dion Morales, and I am joined by Gold Leader himself, Mr. Ron Longhi.
Hello, everybody.
Our targeting coordinator, Mrs. Andrea Longhi.
That's my new title, targeting coordinator.
I don't know. It sounded good
to
me.
It sounds okay. What's up, guys?
It's pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And our historian and flavor judge, Mr. Alex Maring.
Hey, everybody.
He's super excited about his title, so you can tell.
I like flavor judge. I think it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're going to start real quick with a fast Patreon update. For those of you who are our patrons, thank you very much. All of our slots are filled, which is ridiculous. We're going to have to wait until we get out our first set of cards and everything, all the stuff we promised before we open up any more slots because we don't want to green man anybody.
That is awesome. I'm still waiting on my green man shit.
Right, exactly. So, not green manning anybody. Anyone who hasn't received their Asajj card, as long as your payment clears on December 1st, then it's already in the mail by the time you're listening to this. I've been in close contact with Mr. Paul LaRue, and we should have a preview of our two-card set in a couple of weeks. And, of course, we'll post that up as soon as we get them. And for our December raffle, I'm super excited about Rogue One. So, I said, let's give away two tickets to see Rogue One.
Why not?
Yeah. You know, it's Star Wars. We're a Star Wars podcast, so let's give away Star Wars stuff.
It'll save us some money. I mean, I'm probably going to see it like four times, so I would take two tickets.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm saving somebody, you know, in the range of $24 to $30, depending. We'll even give you 3D if you want it. Here we go. So I use my random number generator. It comes out to the number 88, and I scroll down my list here, and the winner is Andrew Stockwell.
Woo-hoo.
Our very own Andrew Stockwell. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Woo-hoot.
It's the better brother. It's the brother that won the battle.
Oh, yeah.
Now he has another thing to brag about.
Absolutely, he does. So Andy actually plays out of our store, which is awesome, and he's super into the podcast, and he shows it by being one of our patrons, and it's awesome that he won these tickets. It's pretty sweet. So now for our thank yous and shout outs of the episode. Andrew Cravens, John Wolin, Jonathan Couch. I cannot pronounce your first name. I'm going to try really hard here. Guillaume Lecrec and Jonathan Lee, we are forever in your debt.
I don't know that that's it, because it looks like it's a French name, and I wouldn't even know how to begin pronouncing a French name. Okay, back to good stuff.
Yeah. I know that a lot of you are really enjoying our How to Practice X-Wing series that we've been doing the last few episodes, and we're going to continue doing that series, but just not today. So we just had the Thanksgiving holiday, Ron got sick, and we just didn't have enough time to work on our script and the talking points before today's show. You know, the next step in the series is going to be practicing opening setups, rock placements, and creating a playbook. And that is an extremely deep topic. And honestly, it might even be split up into multiple episodes because each of those three things, we can talk about it a lot. So, and I really want to get in depth with it. And we didn't want to just come on here and wing it because we want to give good content.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I could spend literally a whole episode just talking about opening setups, not including the other two things.
There you go. So we might end up just splitting those into three episodes in and of themselves. So don't worry, you're going to get that sweet, sweet information very soon. We just want to do it right for everybody who listens to our podcast and, of course, our Patreon supporters. So So the plan is today we're going to talk about the Quad Jumper article that was released last week and the U-Wing article that was released today, the day we're recording. And we'll also make another trip to the archives with Alex to learn about the pilot we all love to hate, Mr. Sunter Fell. I interview Paul LaRue, who's known for his alternate art X-Wing pilot cards. And we'll do some discussion about the upcoming movie, Rogue One.
Get Andy excited for that movie that he got tickets for.
That's right.
As if he wasn't excited before.
I mean, obviously. We'll get Patrick, his brother, more jealous. Let's do it that way.
There you go.
Yeah. There we go.
Unlock the hologram.
So, we're going to start here with the Quad Jumper article. So, I think a good place to start would probably be going over the stats of the ship. Andrea, you want to do that for me?
Yeah, you got it. Okay, so our Quad Jumper stats. 2 attack, 2 agility, 5 hull, and 0 shields.
It has the focus and barrel roll actions. No target lock. Just focus and barrel roll. The slots available to it are a crew slot, 1 bomb slot, the tech slot, and an illicit slot. And I'm excited about this ship. I'll tell you that right now. I think that there's a lot of shenanigans that you can pull off with this thing. But before we go too far deep into that, let's talk about the dial. So if you haven't seen it already, with 3 new maneuvers, there is the one bank both ways and 1 straight reverse maneuvers. All 3 of them are red because, I mean, you're stopping the inertia of a ship and reversing it. I'm curious to see how people are going to use those. What are you guys' thoughts on those reverse maneuvers?
I think it's really cool. It's a whole new element to the game. Obviously this is a maneuver that we've not seen before, so I'm going to be really interested to see how it plays out. I mean, the dial seems really solid. It's got just about everything on it, with the exception of 1 banks, but then you just 1 bank backwards.
There
you
go.
So it seems really strong.
Now, in the article, they basically talk about the ship being a really good blocker, and I'm going to have to agree. I'm really excited about it. It has hard turns. They're not green, but I don't think it needs it with the dial that it does have available to it. I think you're really going to be able to get into people's face with this ship and pull off some shenanigans. Let's go through each of the pilots that we have. We have the pilot skill 1, Jakku Gunrunner, for 15 points. Pilot skill 3, and that is Unkar Plutt, and his ability is...
At the end of the activation phase, you must assign a tractor token to each ship you are touching.
You touch me, you get cooties. Right? I mean, he's a big blobby.
Really,
for those of you who don't for those of you who don't know, Unkar Plutt is Mr. Portions from Force Awakens.
Except he's not from Boston.
No, he pretty much sounded like, this is 1/4 portions.
I would agree with that.
He's from Space Boston.
You have to pay 17 portions in order to put this guy on the field. I'm excited for this guy. I'm going to tell you, the build that I want to try out first is taking Unkar Plutt, and you take the Space Tractor Array. Alex, can you read me the Space Tractor Array?
Space Tug Tractor Array. So Quad Jumper only modification. Action header. Choose a ship inside your firing arc at range 1 and assign a tractor beam token to it. If it is a friendly ship, resolve the effect of the tractor beam token as though it were an enemy ship. 2 points.
You get somebody at range 1 and say, hey, my action, you just got tractor beam. That's an automatic -1 agility. And if it's a small base ship, you can move them if you need to. And then I want to take Unkar Plutt with this upgrade and then use like a pattern analyzer. That way I can shed some stress, maybe do a red maneuver to get in there. That way I can use the action for the space tractor, block them, and then at the end of the activation, give them another tractor beam token. Double tractor beam in one turn for 22 points.
It seems cool. That is a significant portion of your list, though, for a ship that's not doing any damage.
That's what I was going to say. What were we saying about doing gimmicky things with our list building last time?
I didn't say it was good. I said it was fun. but okay. But now, fair. now if I can
it's
pull
your
that off.
It's your list. I get it.
All right. If I can pull that off, it's really annoying, but it's minus two agility on an ace or on a defender.
Yeah, on a defender, I can see that being useful. I don't think you'll hit an ace with it being a three pilot skill. Like, an ace is going to be very smart and stay at range three and just pew pew you.
Maybe.
Well, they get to boost and barrel roll after you make your maneuver.
Not if I block them.
Well, not if you block them.
That's right. That's what I want to do. I want to block them.
No, I understand. Just saying. It's tricky.
Ron doesn't have faith in me. Let's continue. We have the mystery ability on that PS5. And the PS7 is what, Ron?
The PS7 is Constable Suvio. When you reveal a reverse maneuver, you may drop a bomb using your front guidelines, including a bomb with the action header. That's pretty awesome. I like that guy.
I really like that one.
Ron, as our resident bomber, what are your thoughts on that? How can you exploit his ability?
First things to mind, being able to use this guy, right, to jam up a ship, get a block in, especially a Hyler pilot skill ship, and then on your next turn, you just back up and drop a giant bomb in front of you. I don't know, it seems kind of cool. The thing is, it says you may. Mm-hmm. So you could drop it out the back if you wanted to, which would make things interesting if they think they're going to like K-turn behind you, but then you're like, oh, I'm going to go backwards and then drop this bomb right on top of you. So it does make some interesting options.
All right, well, let me ask a question, though. It says when you reveal a maneuver, not when you perform the reverse maneuver. So you would do it before you move.
Oh, yeah. You're right. It does say when you reveal. So, yeah, you could literally just drop it on them before you move, so you're guaranteed to hit.
That's what I really like about this.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Drop a counter net on somebody's face.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I really like about this
or
is that...
Mines. Hit with three
of them.
Yeah,
totally. Hit them with every single cluster mine. But what we were talking about in the last episode about stuff that has action economy is you can use that action bomb without having to actually use your action to drop it.
Like, you kind of need to because you don't get an action when you take the red reverse.
Exactly.
So,
unless you have pattern analyzer.
Right. This is the guy that I'd probably be excited to use the most because now you're getting a little damage out of your 25-point ship or whatever it is going to cost. Interesting enough, you can only carry one bomb, so you're not going to benefit from the fact of being able to get a little economy out of extra munitions, but...
Well, that's a good segue. Cool. Ron's the king of segues. So, speaking of discarding bombs and such, Scavenger Crane, a 2-point illicit upgrade. After a ship at range 1 to 2 is destroyed, you may choose a discarded torpedo, missile, bomb, cannon, turret, or modification upgrade card that was equipped to your ship and flip it face up. Then roll one attack die on a blank, discard Scavenger.
So awesome.
That is disgusting.
Now, I am extremely excited about this and kind of nervous all at the same time. So... one of the things that as soon as this was revealed that I saw out there is really you're going to give Dengar in the Dengaru list be able to use countermeasures over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's on a blank result on an attack die. I believe we have two blanks, right? So that's a 75% chance of Dengar being able to use countermeasures multiple times.
Yep. It also includes missiles. Oh, man.
It's pretty much everything except a crew member.
Yep.
And system. But yeah, if it's something to discard, you can get it back.
Yeah, it seems. And if you're one of those people that likes to use the old damage deck and you get that crit that makes you lose one of your secondary weapons,
mm-hmm.
you can get it back. I don't know that anyone uses the old damage deck.
I guess looking at the condition, right, there has to be a ship that was destroyed at range 1 to 2, and I guess that's where the possibility
Yeah, it doesn't work on Dengar.
Right, well, it is not a friendly ship, it's any ship, so yeah. You take countermeasures, you kill somebody, you get something back.
Mm-hmm. You could even, I mean, it could be you use countermeasures 3 turns later, you get countermeasures back. It doesn't have to be right after you use it, it could just be whenever a ship is destroyed.
Yeah, but that seems like a win more card. Like, if Dengar is killing ships, he's already winning.
Oh, that's true. But yeah. Mm-hmm. For other lists that might want to use this that aren't Dengar, they can. Yeah. You're basically scavenging debris off other ships.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Give me your bombs. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, a piece of candy. Ooh, a piece of candy.
I like that. That's an alt art card right there. You have a brain with like a candy machine. I like it. All right, so let's look at some of these other cards in here. We have the Unkar Plutt crew card. So it's a scum only, and after wait a second. Hold on. I got to go back for a second. The crane, the scavenger crane, it does not say scum only. So that means nope. We can use that on the YT 2400 and 1300.
Correct.
Correctamundo.
Shenanigans. Love it. Okay, man. All right, so the Unkar Plutt crew car. After executing a maneuver that causes you to overlap an enemy ship, you may suffer 1 damage to perform 1 free action. So that's pretty similar to Chopper, but it's the overlapping instead of the stress, but I don't know if that's as good. Point for a crew slot, and there's a lot of really good scum crew. For 1 point,
I don't ever see me using this right now.
I don't know why you'd use it unless you were. I don't know. There must be a reason why. The problem is the crew slot you'd be giving up to take that card, not so much the card itself.
Right.
The card doesn't seem bad.
Right.
Just giving up the crew slot to take that card, I don't know if that's worth it.
This might be one of those cards that just doesn't have a use right now. It might be for have a good use of something later on. Who knows?
It could just be, you know, in your binder with Expose.
Yeah.
And what was the other one that was spoiled in here? A score to settle.
Yep. Condition. So a score to settle. It is a unique EPT, 0 points. During setup, before the place forces step, choose 1 enemy ship and assign the a debt to pay condition card to it. When attacking a ship that has the a debt to pay condition card, you may change 1 focus result to a crit result. And for those that don't remember a debt to pay, when attacking a ship that has the a score to settle upgrade card, you may change 1 focus result to a crit result. So it's basically just telling you the same thing.
Right, but it's on you as opposed to...
Right.
It goes both ways.
It goes both ways.
Yep.
So it's 0 points, EPT slot... Okay. Kind of gives you that rear admiral Chernu kind of ability.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like Kallus, but I mean, it's similar. I don't know if I would use an EPT for this. I know, yeah, it hurts you too, which is, you know, kind of how scum is. It's always not quite the same as like Rebel or Imperial. There's usually a downside to it.
Interesting. If you found a really cool way to use this, let us know. Because I mean, of course, this is first glance here.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think.
All these condition things are really interesting. That's a whole new element to the game.
I like them. I think it's really cool. It opens up some design space and just gives the, you know, like Frank and Alex were talking about on the live show, right? It just gives them more space to write words. That's the quad jumper. Definitely, I think, going to be one of those where you're going to have to fly it really well in order to get some really good results. I don't think there's any type of easy mode with that pilot whatsoever.
I look at that ship as, like, probably best use is, like, the same use almost as a naked A-Wing. It's just 15 points, and it's just going to get in the way and block and be efficient in that manner. At least competitively.
I like it.
As far as the other modes, like Gunkar Plot and whatever the 7 pilot skill guy, I mean, they all seem fun and gimmicky, but they don't seem good enough in competitive play, in my opinion. But that's just a first look, obviously.
Yeah, we're going to have to put it on the table when it comes out. I think the U-Wing is my new favorite Star Wars ship.
Really?
Yeah, I really like it. I like the design. I'm excited to see it in the movie. It used to be the Snowspeeder, but that's not space-worthy, so...
I've been pretty meh about it so far.
Oh.
I did like it better when I saw its S-foils go out, because at first I'm like, why are those like that? But yeah. I don't know. I can't get over Imperial ship design over Rebel design. I don't know why.
But whatever, let's continue. So we got the U-Wing article dropped today. Today is Monday, November 28th, the day we're recording this. And we'll go through the stats real quick. The stats on the ship are, it has 3 attack dice, 1 defense, 4 hull, 4 shields. Its actions are focus and target lock. For its slots, we have the sensor slot, 1 torpedo slot, and 2 crew. The pilot skill 2 ship is 23 points, and like we talked about before, because they snuck it into the end of the Sabine article, either accidentally or on purpose, this pilot skill 2 is 23 points. And in this article, they showed us some really cool crew, which is what I want to go over first. Who wants to take the first one?
I'll take Baze. What is his name? Baze Malbus?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
After you perform an attack that does not hit, you may immediately perform a primary weapon attack against a different ship. You cannot perform another attack this round. So he's a 3-point crew member that gives you a gunner-like effect, except you can only attack another ship. You can't attack the same ship.
So as the ship count goes up in the meta, this becomes a better card for 3 points. And in the early game, but then as when you get into the late game, if you have this on there, it could be a wasted crew.
Yeah, I mean, late game, this card is very poor. It does nothing. Early game, this helps you. I'm not sure how good this card is. I mean, man, it's tough because, I mean, you go, like, look at Worlds, for example. Like, how many multiple ship metas were there really? I mean, I would say majority of the room was 2 and 3 ship builds. There, I flew a 4-ship build, and that was very rare. I don't think I played against a single 4-ship build in 8 rounds of Swiss. The most I saw was a 3-ship. So I don't know how often you're going to be able to use his ability. And this also allows you to spread damage out, which I don't know if that's very good. If Swarm is ever a thing, that card would be quite good.
Yeah. 3 points. We'll have to see. I like the art on it. He looks real, real smug in that picture. Andrea, you want to take the next one?
Bodhi Rook. When you acquire a target lock, you can lock onto an enemy ship at range 1 to 3 of any friendly ship. And this is a crew card for 1 point. It's also rebel only.
Now that's a good card.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that one.
That's what we're talking about. We're talking about upgrades, man. 1 point, the bay option, so you don't even have to use its effect. You just get an awesome additional effect.
Yeah, you're basically extending your range by your other ships.
Correct. Seems awesome.
Is there some, like, checking for target lock shenanigans here? You're, like, super far away, and you start from the faraway ship, and you know you don't have it. You're like, check for target lock. Now the next ship.
Yeah.
The next ship. to you're in range, and you know what you want to lock there?
I really like this for a couple reasons. Like, especially I like that they gave this to the Rebels, because... Like, you look at the one thing that Scum and Imperial players have, is they both have 2 different ships that you want to kill that have unlimited ranged abilities. So, like, the shuttle with the Palpatine. Like, you want to kill it, but often it's out of range of the ships that you want to kill it. So this allows you, if you get one ship in range, you can get that target lock on the ship that you want to hit it on the next turn. So when you are in range, you're like target lock focus. And the same thing with Manaru. Like, Manaru can be frustrating. You might get a ship in range for a turn to lock it, but you might not be able to lock it with the ship that you want to hit it with. So this is, I think this is a really good card.
Maybe using that prototype A-Wing you were talking about, that really good fast blocker, just kind of get it in and out, get your target locks with it. Get it in its spots?
No, I definitely like this. Although, does A-Wings have crew slots? I don't think they do.
No, but you can put
But you can use it, right. Yeah, you put that on the other ship, correct.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, this is super awesome.
So, talking about Bodhi Rook, let's take a look at his PS4 U-Wing pilot card. So, he has a very similar ability. All the same stats, no EPT on this guy. It says when a friendly ship acquires a target lock, that ship can lock onto an enemy ship at range 1 to 3 of any friendly ship. So
that's his ability on the pilot. That's awesome.
Right. Yeah. It's just saying now everybody basically has that 1-point crew card, right?
Yeah.
Well, all rebels.
Oh, well, yeah. All rebels. But, I mean, for 1 point, and I mean, I kind of look at it as if you were thinking about taking the PS2 Squadron Pathfinder and Bodhi Rook crew, you just take Bodhi Rook pilot unless you really need to be PS2. Same ability, and all of your ships get it, not just. So I want to take a second here, and I'm going to read off Cassian Andor. Now, he was spoiled in the Wave 10 spoilers, or when they showed the Rogue One, like, hey, Rogue One ships are coming out. And listening back to our episodes, we actually skipped this one, which is a shame because his ability is awesome. So at the end of the planning phase, you may choose an enemy ship at range 1 to 2, guess out loud that ship's bearing and speed, then look at its dial. If you're correct, you may rotate your dial to another maneuver. It's Intel Agent plus shenanigans. I like it.
Yeah, a lot of people are just going, oh, this is just Intel Agent, but Intel Agent doesn't let you actively change if you guess it correctly.
I think this is a great card because it does a couple things. It gives you insurance, and it gives you that opportunity where you're looking for a block or for some positioning. You say, all right, I know my opponent is either going to do this is the smart move. Let's say it's a 2-forward, right? It's probably a 2-forward. Or if they're being really aggressive, they're going to do a 4K with whatever ship they have. So I think you guess the outlandish, kind of more risky maneuver. And if they did it, then you can adjust, even though you maybe planned originally for the quote unquote safe or smart maneuver.
I think this card's great. I can't tell you how many times, you know, in a game of X-Wing, you've, like, successfully guessed your opponent's maneuver with no reward, just guessing it. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess you do get a reward, but I don't know. It's pretty sweet to be like, all right, I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to do. I'm going to guess it and then be able to full-on react. I don't know. I think it's pretty good.
And then even if you guess it wrong, you still get that information.
I think this is going to be a really great upgrade for a supporting ship, or being able to know what that ship is doing before the activation phase even starts. You can plan all of your other ship's maneuvers, like barrel rolls, boosts, whatever, around knowing that information.
Another thing that this card can do for you is your opponent knows you have this ability to check on their dial and adjust. So you might end up affecting the way your opponent is flying, and they might start flying suboptimally because they're afraid of your Cassian Andor crew.
Mm-hmm.
And if they start making bad choices because of that, then it also becomes worth its points because, hey, you're doing things that are, you know, putting you in bad positioning. You're in range one of all my ships now because you wanted to change your maneuver to something I wouldn't guess.
Yeah, I think for 2 points, this card's pretty good.
We'll go to the pilot skill 3 U-Wing. Here it's Hef Tober. I have no idea who that is. I'm sure we'll learn pretty soon. He does not have an EPT. After an enemy ship executes a maneuver that causes it to overlap your ship, you may perform a free action. This is the one where you, I think you take Hera crew, right? And you just stop forever. You're like, bump, bump, give me my actions. Bump, 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 focus every turn. Bump, bump, bump.
This ship, I mean, I'm sure it's for balance reasons that it's a large base ship, but this is going to look really weird because this is a very small looking model on a large base. At least to me.
Oh, I agree.
Well, I mean, anything compared to the Ghost is small.
I mean, this thing is like no bigger than a Y-Wing almost.
Really?
Without the wings. I mean, the wings definitely make it long.
I've been saying for a couple of years that FFG should make a ship that is equal to two bases put together instead of four.
God.
Like a third ship size.
A medium.
That would just be like it would have the length of two small bases put together, but not the width.
Yeah, that would this would fit that category.
Yeah. There's a couple other ships that would have fit that category too.
Yeah.
I think at this point that's probably just never gonna happen.
Never say never.
Yeah, we said never with the Ark, and look what happened.
Yeah, this is true.
We also said never to reverse flying ships. We got those too.
All right, I never said never to that.
So I'm going to say never, and then it'll come out in the next wave. Never medium bases.
I mean, think about it. It would give them more space to design actual ships. You know what I mean? Because right now, everything's got to be large or small. This would give you a third design space.
Let's take a second here and look at another one of our crew cards that we have in this pack. So we have the Inspiring Recruit. It is a 1-point crew card. It is open to any faction. No faction restriction here. Once per round, when a friendly ship at range 1 to 2 removes a stress token, it may remove one additional stress token. And notice that it did say a friendly ship at range 1 to 2, not another. That includes yourself. Rage, anybody?
Yep. Rage and Ezra.
Yeah, that's what everybody's immediately going towards.
Oh, really?
Yeah, everybody's like Rage everywhere with this upgrade. I am amazed that this is I guess not amazed, but that this isn't a unique.
Okay, so for 2 points, if you have a crew slot and an EPT, you can get target lock focus every turn, as long as you, of course, clear the stress. So we talked a little bit about this when it was first revealed. We have the Jyn Erso crew. I'm going to have to say this, man. The art on the Jyn Erso crew, not good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, man.
She looks weird.
Yeah. It's her nose.
It's her nose.
I'd say it's her eyes.
It's both. Like, it
looks like a dog.
And she's got, like, almost like a Cousin It smile kind of smile thing going. I don't like it.
So, the Jyn Erso crew is Rebel only, and as an action, choose one friendly ship at range 1 to 2. Assign one focus token to that ship for each enemy ship inside your firing arc at range 1 to 3. You cannot assign more than 3 focus tokens in this way. So get in the arc of a bunch of ships. Yay, I have focus. And then you get burned out. Feel about this card? 2 points.
Well, especially since for this to be beneficial, you need to be up in the face of multiple ships. And sure, you've got multiple focus tokens, so you can use them on multiple defensive roles. But I don't know, it could be much more harmful than valuable, because it would have to, for you to get the value out of the card, kind of need to put yourself in harm's way.
I kind of like this on Kanan.
Well, it's a ghost, so sure.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the ghost can take a couple focus fires, and with Kanan's ability, you can easily protect the rest of your squad.
Well, he uses them to lower the attack of ships at range 1 to 2. That's where it's good.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, this works on Kanan. That's about it.
This is another one of those cards that kind of has diminishing returns as the game goes on. It's worth less because there's less things on the table and there's probably less of your ships on the table too, because it does have a support-ish ability because it's choose a friendly ship at range 1 to 2 so you could use it for other people. But yeah, Kanan, definitely a good spot for that. Do want to talk about the dial because that has been revealed. It has a zero stop. It has one banks and one straight that are green. It has two hard turns that are white, two banks and two straight that are green. It has three banks and three straight that are white, and a four straight that is white. So one of my original plans when I saw this ship was spoiled before we saw the dial was to put Hera crew on it, because I just think the idea of having a infinitely kind of rotating U-wing is funny, but the fact that it only has one red maneuver made me a little disappointed. Which is very rare to be disappointed with the lack of red maneuvers.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I do really like this style.
I really like it. I think it's better than I was expecting. I was thinking if it had three banks or... Well, it doesn't have three turns, but I was definitely thinking... Maybe if it did have a three turn, that would be red, but it's not even on the dial, so that doesn't matter. But other than that, I think it has a lot of greens, and it's just that zero stop with the 180 is going to be really cool.
I think it's good. I mean, it is slightly more maneuverable than the Slaver. It's got a stop. I think the dial is pretty good for this ship.
So that is currently all the cards that are spoiled for the U-Wing. Looking at that spread of the cards, are there any cards that haven't been spoiled yet?
Yep, the first one.
First one. I can't see the spread there.
Oh, it's got a picture of Donnie Yen's character. Looks like he's hand-to-hand fighting someone. It starts with EXP... Something about when attacking, stressed, and that's about it.
All right, so we'll see what that is soon. Curious to see what that's going to be. I'm sure we'll find out soon. So now,
and a crew member with that. I forgot his name. The short alien gunner guy that laughs in the promos.
Bistan?
Yeah, Bistan.
Bistan.
Yeah, he's on there too.
Okay. Hopefully you get to cackle.
It has something to do with attacking. Can't tell if that's a hit or a stop icon. I think it's a hit because it says results afterward. Yeah.
We covered the quad jumper. We covered the U-wing, and I'm pretty sure that we're probably going to be seeing the U-wing and the TIE Striker here at least pretty soon. I mean, the movie comes out now in what, 3-4 weeks?
Mm-hmm. And it does say in the article that you will get this before the movie.
So. Here's my guess, right? Next week, we get the TIE Striker article. The week after that, we get the ships. And the week after that is the movie?
Yeah. They got to be shipping, so today's the 28th. FFG's website has to update with shipping by Thursday.
Sweet. All right, I'm going to get that U-Wing. I'm excited. So let's move on to our next segment. I am here with Paul LaRue. If you haven't heard of him, you probably haven't been playing X-Wing very long. He's a well-known X-Wing player and artist out of Edmonton, Alberta of Canada. Is that correct,
that
Paul?
That is correct.
All right. So, you know, those of you who have heard him, you probably have heard of his really sweet alternate art cards. I mean, they are probably, in my opinion... one of the most collectible, non-official X-Wing things out there. It's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Now, most people might not know that you are actually also a really good X-Wing player. What are some of your accolades?
Oh, well, I've been playing since X-Wing first came out. I used to be a Warhammer 40K competitive player and made the switch to X-Wing pretty much as soon as it was available. And I've won a few regionals over the years. I've won a bunch of store championships, a bunch of other local events and such. So been playing pretty much nonstop. It's nice. I actually get to play with my son, who did pretty well last year at Worlds, and he's working his way up in the world of X-Wing, at least locally and semi-locally. So
that's awesome. I mean, he placed in, what did you tell me, 24th when he was 11 years old?
24th, yeah, last year. So 2015 Worlds, we couldn't make it this November, but he lost two games, and in both games it came down, his opponent was down to one hull point remaining, and a single dice roll in either game would have seen him make the cut to top 16.
Wow, yeah. That's awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
Well, I mean, hopefully you guys can make it out to the 2017 Worlds, and he can just, you know, improve that performance.
Hopefully. That's sort of the plan. We'll see how May goes.
Maybe a father and son top table?
That would be amazing. I mean, that happens a lot locally. We end up playing each other at tournaments pretty much all the time. But at that level, who knows?
That's awesome. That's awesome. So we're going to get into some content here to learn a little bit more about you, because, you know, most of us just look at a card. We see your name on the back, says Paul LaRue. And whenever you say, hey, I got a new card, we all just jump and get it. But I want to know, who is Paul LaRue? You know, not just some pieces of plastic that I have in my binder, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Did you study art? You self-taught? Tell us about, where'd you get your skills?
For sure. Yes, I studied art. So back actually in high school, I started taking college night courses in illustration and drawing. Then once I graduated high school, I went into illustration and graphic design. And after I graduated, I've been working as a graphic designer for a little over the last 20 years. And really just kind of gotten to the point where working on people's websites and logos and stuff just wasn't that much fun, and I wanted to do something new, so I started focusing on my artwork.
That's awesome. How would you describe your art style?
It's kind of interesting. I've actually had other people classify it as classical comic art with a modern twist, and I'm not sure if I can describe it better than that. So,
yeah, you were an artist who played games, you started playing X-Wing. I mean, was that just the natural progression to say, hey, I'm going to draw my own cards?
Pretty much. I was actually working on a web comic before I started the X-Wing cards, and that was sort of my creative outlet, just to do something fun and interesting for myself when I wasn't working on client work. And then it got to the point where I wanted some, you know, exclusive cards for pilots that weren't likely going to get made by FFG. So I started with Dark Curse. He was my first card that I did, and then worked out from there.
Awesome. Awesome. Could you give us maybe a little bit of insight of how you know, I'm not an artist, I'm a musician, mm-hmm. but I have no insight into how is it that you go about your process when you decided, all right, I want to make this pilot. How do you go about deciding what to do on the card besides draw a ship?
Right, for sure. The biggest thing I think with my cards is that I always try and put in a hint of a story. You'll have some people that will talk about art and stuff of, you know, the really good stuff tells a whole story. Really? But with something so simple as just a one static image, I really go for a hint of a story, and to give people the idea that something's going on, instead of just going, okay, here's a TIE fighter, here's an X-Wing or whatever. There's always that little twist, hopefully, in it that will spark someone's imagination. And I think that's one of the biggest draws. So I always start with the concept stage of trying to come up, well, okay, what is unique about this pilot? So there's a lot of times where I'll go and I'll research the pilots if they're some of the odd ones from the Expanded Universe or Legends that I don't know, and figure out what's their personality, what are they doing, what would they be doing? And then I go from there. And sort of the technical process is I do almost all of the work digitally now, even though I really like ink and watercolor. It's just a lot easier to work digitally in Photoshop. So mm-hmm. I draw straight on my screen. I have a Cintiq that I draw on. So it still retains all of that hand-drawn look because it still is hand-drawn, even though it's on a computer screen.
And, oh, that's great.
Yeah. I have people come up to me, especially at shows and stuff, when they're looking at my artwork, and they're like, how do you do this? Is it marker? Is it watercolor? What is it? Because a lot of the current artists that do digital work, it becomes very obvious because the computer tends to push you in certain directions. So it's a bit of a challenge to sort of go, no, this, you know, it looks like it's markers on paper because it's drawn exactly the same way if it was on paper. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. It takes a little bit of effort. And there's times where I very much make sure that, like, not all my lines are straight. You know, not everything's precise because the computer really wants to make things precise. So those times mm-hmm. I've drawn stuff and gone back and redrawn it just so it's looser and has a little bit more flavor to it. So,
but yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, that's awesome. Yeah. You're using the computer as a tool, not letting it put you inside of a box.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, you've done now. I mean, do you know how many pilots you've drawn?
No, not off the top of my head, I don't. But a lot.
Could you maybe pull out from memory, like, maybe your three favorite?
Yeah, for sure. Probably my favorite ones that are publicly viewable at the moment would be the Harlequin's Boba Fett for Imperial Assault that I just did. It's the one with Boba Fett and Han Solo and Carbonite. That's
yes.
One of my favorite ones. There's just a little bit of a hint of the relationship there that I know a few people have commented on, and just it's kind of an interesting card and piece of art. I also really like my IG-88B Full Art, which is a pretty recent card as well. IG-88 is one of my favorite characters, and he's great in the game, love his ship. And then probably a third would be the Imperial Raider that I just recently did as a commission. Mm-hmm. Because that really had a level of technical difficulty to it. It's doing the dual cards is always tricky to make sure everything lines up well and that they work on their own. But now when you work with the epic ships, they have the damage side. So you have to make sure that the damage side matches up with the good side and the good side matches up with the damage side. And if you're trying to tell any kind of story with it, that it still makes sense. So that was a lot of fun and very challenging. So definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah, I saw when you posted that one up, and it's amazing, right? You got one, you flip one of them and it looks like they're being attacked by one of the aggressors. And then you flip over the other side and it, you know, it's the other side of the ship being attacked. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a fun project.
Now, I'm going to have to flip the coin on you. Is there maybe an art card where you go, man, I don't really like that one?
There is one that was actually an early commission that somebody commissioned for me. It was a Sinterfell card, and he had a couple things he wanted to see in it, and I didn't. It's definitely my least favorite card, and I actually haven't posted that card anywhere, so if anybody tries to find it, they probably won't. Which goes in hand with being my least favorite card.
That's awesome. So, you know, before I let you go here, I heard that you might be coming to Chicago in February.
Yeah, that's a rumor right now. We'll see. Still some stuff to work out. I really hope so. I think that would be a lot of fun. It'd be nice to come down there. I've never been to Chicago. So it'd be neat to come and see what the local scene is like down there and meet people. And that's always a blast, and play some games and play against people that I haven't and go from there. But we'll see. Hopefully we can say something more specific soon.
I'm excited for that. And lastly, I want to thank you very much for working so hard on our exclusive commission. It's looking amazing, and I cannot wait to release that picture once it's completely done.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to posting that too. I think it'll be pretty popular. So that's been a lot of fun working on that one as well.
All right, Paul. Well, this has been an interview with Paul LaRue. Any shout outs you want to do, Paul, before I let you go?
Really just thanks to the fans. I really enjoy doing this and it's a lot of fun. Obviously I'm also a huge player and fan of Star Wars, but without all the fans that have been promoting me online and, you know, purchasing the cards and just being really excited about it, I wouldn't be doing this if, you know, they weren't out there. So I really appreciate that.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on, Paul.
Perhaps the archives are incomplete.
If an item does not appear in our records, it does not exist.
So we have returned to the archives with Alex Maring, and today we're going to talk about
Baron Soontirfel, everybody's most favorite pilot.
I hate Soontirfel.
No, you love him.
We love to hate him if we play against him.
Okay, so Soontir, he started off, he was born on Corellia, which is probably the, if we go in the grand scheme of Star Wars, the most important planet in Star Wars. Because a lot of people, Corellia. So he was born to just a family of farmers. They worked for this big farming corporation called Allied Grain and Roughage. His family was very, they upheld very strict ideals of loyalty and depending on your friends and family, family first, all that other kind of stuff. So while he was working for the farming company, he developed his piloting skills flying a skyhopper, kind of like what Luke flew on Tatooine. So he developed his skills there, became a pretty good farmer. I lost my train of thought. Oh, there we go. I have notes and I lost my train of thought. I don't know how that happens. So when he was about 17 or 18 years old, he came across a group of guys about to assault this girl that was a friend of his, and he beat them all up and stopped it and saved her and whatnot. But the problem is that all those guys were sons of people on the board of directors for the company that he worked for, that big farming corporation. So there wasn't really anything he could do to hold them accountable because they would just get off by their, you know, rich daddies from the police, except for the director of the AGR Corporation told Fell that he could run away to the Imperial Academy and he can get him a word in to get him just accepted right away because, you know, he was such a good farmer and he wanted to repay his good work and all that stuff. So he got away to the Imperial Academy before he got caught up with more roughnecks on the planet. And that's where he met Han Solo while he was at the Academy. And these two were pretty much rivals their entire time at the Academy. They both were kind of equal in skill with flying and stuff. They all excelled in all the rest of their coursework, but all they really cared about was flying. They both had mutual respect for each other, even though they didn't get along very well. Solo was more roguish, and he thought Soontirfel was just this, you know, kind of weird farm boy. Soontir graduated salutatorian behind Han Solo, so he wasn't always such a roguish character. He actually did good in school. Vader and Tarkin were there for their graduation. They congratulated Soontir on his accomplishments, yada, yada, yada. Soontir was then... he rose quickly through the ranks. He graduated out of the academy, lieutenant, and he rose pretty quickly through the ranks through various battles and such and became a captain in the Imperial Navy and was given his own ship. So he captained his own ship until he was defeated in trying to stop this smuggling ring that, wouldn't you know it, Han Solo was part of. So they actually defeated the Empire, and Vader came down pretty harshly on another officer that Soontir was commanding with, but Soontir wasn't, he was spared Vader's vengeance. In defeat, he was basically demoted to a flight instructor for the new round of cadets, and while he was an instructor, he taught Tycho Telchew, Biggs Darklighter, Derek Clivian, should all be familiar names. During that time, Biggs and Derek defected. They stole a frigate, and that was another bad mark on Soontir's record. They transferred him to the 181st Fighter Wing, which was nicknamed the 180 worst. They had one of the worst records, if not the most worst record, in the Imperial Navy. They were just a horrible fighter wing. They'd never got anything done, and they were very undisciplined. During this time, he fell in love with a girl, and this is a Star Wars name, but Winissa Starflare. And she was actually in hiding. She was actually the sister of Wedge Antilles. Her real name was Seal Antilles. And he proposed to her, but she was very worried that at some point Soontir and Wedge would end up killing each other, and she didn't want to go through with it, but he eventually convinced her and they got married.
That's why Soontir's always stressed.
That's a good lore reason. I'll accept it.
Sorry, I know that was really cheesy.
So eventually, Soontir took over command completely of the 181st. He completely turned them around from the worst group in the Navy to one of the best. They were present at the Battle of Hoth. They were picking off any fighters and transports that didn't get away. And afterwards, after the Battle of Hoth, the entire squadron was upgraded to TIE interceptors. And then he then created Saber Squadron. And he went by the call sign Saber One. And the reason that some of the Saber Squadrons have blood stripes is 10 kills that gets you a blood stripe on your ship. He was also present at the Battle of Endor, but just was overwhelmed. He couldn't really do much during that battle. There was a lot of just bickering between all of the Imperial high command. They were just giving bad orders, conflicting orders, so he eventually just retreated with the rest of the fleet. After the Emperor was killed, there was just a lot of infighting within the Empire between all the Grand Moffs. They couldn't elect just one leader, so they ended up pretty much fighting themselves. So he actually defected to the New Republic. He actually joined Rogue Squadron under their call sign Rogue 10. Afterwards, Grand Admiral Thrawn recruited him into the new Empire of the Hand because he had shown him what new forces awaited him outside of their known galaxy, which we might get into in a later episode. But I didn't want to go too far into it. That's really the bulk of Soontir's Imperial career. Hopefully that gives you a little more background about why a good pilot he is.
Wow. So here's just a question to throw out there. So he was Rogue 10. So that means he flew an X-Wing?
He did.
Put it on a card.
That's the Rebel Aces. Soontir fell.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted? What have you done with those plans?
What have you done with those plans?
All right, my favorite part of this segment. We have a couple things going on. January 29th, 2017, Dragonfall is going to sponsor an escalation tournament at the College DuPage for their Polar Vortex convention. Alex is actually going to be the head marshal for that event. So if you're looking for a tournament that is different but fun, Escalation is pretty cool. It doesn't happen all that often due to the amount of rounds and time. But I think I might check this out.
Yeah, I've wanted to do an Escalation tournament for a while. I think it's a really cool, it definitely changes the way you play. If you haven't heard of that before, you basically start off with a really short list at 60 points. And over four rounds, you just keep increasing the point value, but you have to keep the list that you had the round before it. You just keep building onto the same list.
So that event is January 29th. It's exciting to check this out. I'm excited because particularly with the rules changes since I've last played Escalation, now regen has been nerfed a little bit, and I think you'll see some more exciting lists other than just, you know, two rebel ships or one rebel ship with regen. Well, we also have the Chicago Regional coming up February 4th and 5th. Just like last year, it'll be a two-day event. February 4th will be the Swiss rounds. All the Swiss rounds will be completed on February 4th. All of the elimination rounds will be played on February 5th. We will also have a four-round redemption tournament on February 5th. Everything will be completed by about 4 p.m. Registration will be going up very soon. We haven't posted the registration yet, only because we are not 100% sure on the venue, whether it's going to be at Pastimes or one of the other buildings in the same area as Pastimes. As soon as that registration comes up, I promise you will know it. I will be posting it everywhere. As far as local events, all of the Gold Squadron members played off Pastimes and Niles. We have several different monthly events, as well as weekly play. Our monthly events are very simple. It's on a rotating schedule. So, first Sunday of every month is X-Wing. Second Sunday of every month is Imperial Assault. Third Sunday of each month is Star Wars the Card Game or Star Wars LCG. Fourth Sunday of each month is Armada. For weekly play, we have X-Wing every Wednesday night. We have a huge league, 20-plus players every league. Armada, our open and league play has been switched to Tuesday nights going forward. Everything will be on Tuesday. This is actually to get some more players in who play at other local stores and not have our night conflict with their night, and vice versa. We will also be doing the same thing for Destiny. Star Wars Destiny came out. We had a launch party. Huge hit. 30-plus people sold out of all the product within the first 30 minutes of the event. Everyone seems to like it. Every Friday night, we're going to have open play and league play for Destiny. It'll be constructed play, meaning just bring a team that's 30 points worth of characters and your 30-card deck. And get battling. And I think that's all we got for events right now.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to episode 15 of the Gold Squadron podcast. We love putting out these episodes for you. But before we go, we're going to just do a real quick. What are you excited about for Rogue One? And what are you maybe a little nervous about when it comes to the story or the movie or the implications this have on the Star Wars universe? Who wants to go first?
I can go first.
Go for it.
I'm excited to see Vader crush some people. That's what I'm excited for. If they don't do him justice, that's what I'm going to be nervous about. He should just come in and wipe some people down.
My wife is vicious.
What I'm excited and worried about kind of go hand in hand. I'm also excited about Vader. I'm worried that they're adding a lot of new things that don't exist anywhere else. And I can kind of understand that. I know the planet that the Death Star is over is like a secret research station, so I guess that can make sense that everything's a prototype and all these characters. But what I'm hoping is that throughout the whole movie, Vader is always one step behind all the rebels. And then when they finally get that transmission off, the door just opens and he just kills them all. And that's why they are nowhere else.
I fully expect Jyn Erso to be dead at the end of the movie, to be honest.
I expect them all to be dead.
Maybe one survivor, maybe, to tell the story. Or they die on the doorstep of the Corellian Corvette, if they have doorsteps. Airlock.
I was going to say the airlock. They die in the airlock.
Yeah. Well, since I'm also excited to see Vader kill some people, that's definitely one thing I am looking for. But to be different, let's say I'm excited to see how Saw Gerrera ties into the Clone Wars. I'm a huge fan of the Clone Wars, of Star Wars Rebels, and everything that Dave Filoni and his team has done with television. So to see his character that they created in a live-action film, that is super exciting for me. That gives me hope for maybe seeing Ahsoka in a live-action film. The thing I'm nervous about, I'm a little nervous. I just don't want it to be like Episode 7. I don't want it to feel like a rehash of another Star Wars movie. I want it to be different and original. So that's what I'm hoping for.
So, for me, I'm excited for Rogue One. Extremely excited. I want to see how they tie in the original trilogy to this. I do agree that it shouldn't be a rehash, but I know, especially, you know, our guys like Alex, he's going to want to, right? We're going to want to see consistency between this, because this is basically episode 3.5, right? Also, most of us listening to this podcast and all of us recording this, we fully understand that this goes before episode 4. Like, we know that. And I want Star Wars to be a thing for a really long time and continue that. And the only thing I'm a little bit nervous about is your casual fan going into the theater and saying, "Where's Rey?" Or, "Wow, Rey looks really different." You know?
Yeah, that's going to happen.
I'm curious to see how they address that, because they have to know that that's going to be a problem. So how are they going to address that? Because I want this movie to be extremely successful. That way we can continue to have these stories continuing outside of just the episodic saga. And Rogue One, a couple weeks. We're sending Andy to go see the movie. We're all going to go see it. And, we'll take a couple minutes after the movie has come out to just kind of give our initial thoughts without spoilers, of course. I'm pumped.
I will say, I think K2SO is going to steal the show.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he looks great. Have they officially announced or not announced there's going to be a crawl at the beginning of this movie?
No,
or
crawl.
Not? So that makes it even less confusing.
That makes it more confusing because it doesn't get you up to speed.
Right.
Yeah. Why no crawl?
They
don't understand.
I think they're going to have like all the episodic, so like, episode 7, 8, 9, they're going to have a crawl, but all the side stories, so Rogue One, the Han Solo movie, whatever comes after, those won't have crawls.
It's just one of those things I feel like they're trying to make it different just to be different. Like, that's something that's part of Star Wars. It should just have a crawl. Even the little Clone Wars had, like, the little start at the beginning. I don't know.
I mean, I get it. Between the episodic movies, kind of what's already going on. This is really dropping you in the middle of a brand new story.
Yeah, which, like I said, all the more reason to have a crawl, but I don't know.
Did you guys see what they did at Celebration, how they started the episode 4 crawl and then they like shifted it and stood it up and they like highlighted the sentence where they talk about the stolen plan?
Well, I think that was in the original teaser trailer. That's what they did.
Yeah.
I think they released it at Celebration or whatever it was, but yeah, that was the original teaser trailer when they did that.
I would be totally fine with that being the opening of the movie because it was really cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Well, that was episode 15. I know that, not as super organized as we like to be usually, but, we just finished eating a bunch of turkey. You just did. If you're in the UK or somewhere else that didn't have Thanksgiving.
Sorry.
Yeah, our bad.
More turkey and stuffing for us.
Yeah. and just something really cool. Or something I'd like to do. I'd like to see. I know that we have a map here that shows me where things are downloaded from, but I would like to make our own personal map of people who have contacted us, slash our Patreon supporters of basically our reach for the podcast. So send us an email or go on Facebook. So facebook.com/GoldSquadronPodcast. or go to, you can email us at goldsquadronpodcast@gmail.com. And lastly, with our Patreon, we did talk about it being sold out, but if you still want to support, we still have a bracket there. You can do $1 or more. There's no specific rewards, but you do get entered into the raffle that we do every month. Andy just won some Rogue One tickets. You can go in there, and anybody who is in that bracket will be notified before anybody else, before we put on a podcast, of the new rewards that would be coming out, and they would be free to jump into one of those new brackets that we have before we announce it publicly. Our swag has become super popular, which is great, and I want to give that opportunity to anybody who wants it. Thank you very much. Ron, have a good night.
Thank you, guys. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Andrea, our targeting coordinator.
Good night, guys.
Alex, wonderful lore segment. Thank you.
My pleasure. Good night.
This has been episode 15. Gold Squadron, out.